Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now. Save big money
at Menards. You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at rss.com.
Welcome to the 345th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your host today, Patrick Winograd. In this edition, our topics are a review of my weekend predictions, a review of recent NCAA tournament action, and our weekly look at the NBA, and finally, a preview of the upcoming MLB season, which starts officially tomorrow. So let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions. Starting in college basketball, where I went 3-1, and in the NBA, I also went 3-1, which gave me a 6-2 week overall, bringing me to 1,512 and 955 overall record, a 61.3% winning percentage. Going to college basketball, they were all first-round games. I had number 11 VCU beating North Carolina, which happened 82-78 in overtime. Number 10 Texas A&M beat number 7 St. Mary 63-50. That was the only game I got wrong in those predictions. And then number 7 seeded UCLA beat number 10 UCF 75-71. And number 9 seeded Iowa beat number 8 seeded Clemson 67-61. Then in the NBA, the Rockets beat the Hawks 117-95. Which I got correct. The Nuggets beat the Raptors 121-115, which I got correct. The Lakers beat the Magic on a Luke Kennard buzzer beater 105-104. That was the only prediction I got wrong this week. And then the Timberwolves went on the road to beat the Celtics 102-92. So overall 3-1 in the NBA. Not going to spend too much time on the predictions because this is a very, very heavy episode in terms of different content. But very happy with the week overall, obviously. And overall just doing well in predictions. Obviously, the NCAA, this will be the last week of predictions for probably, well, not the entire season, because of course the Final Four will be next week, but the last full week of predictions there, of course. The Final Four will have obviously fewer predictions, but NBA, of course, just kicking into high gear, soon to be in the playoffs. So very interested for those predictions coming up next week, but now we'll move on with a look at the NCAA tournament. I think it's worth it to go basically region by region here, starting in Duke's region, that would be the East. I'll just go through the important games in each of them and then talk about the Sweet 16 a little bit, but Duke obviously was the closest one seed to losing by far. Siena actually pretty much had them on the ropes. I mean, it was a double-digit lead at some point in the game. Duke really struggled to bring that one back, but they did eventually. Then you have TCU, who beat Ohio State. That was the first game of the tournament, a very close game as well. Good game in the first round. St. John's blew through Northern Iowa and then Kansas pretty easily. Well, not pretty easily. Kansas was up a lot on Cal Baptist, and then at the end of the game it got pretty close. But they were winning that game by a lot for a while. Same thing kind of happened with Louisville and USF. Louisville had a commanding lead, really relinquished it at the end, though, in USF. Probably would have won if they had made two or three more, really, not even like wide open looks, but semi-open looks from three. They definitely had their opportunities and didn't shoot their way through the game like people thought they might. Then Michigan State breezed through North Dakota State. UCLA beat UCF, excuse me, tight game, but a win for the Bruins nonetheless. And then UConn kind of struggled with Furman, but Terrace Reed had a monster game, nearly 30-30, a 30-25 game. For the big man. So good game by UConn in the end. Well, good game by Terrace Reed. I don't want to say the whole team played well. I think that would be, frankly, just lying. But they did move on to the round of 32, of course. That was a matchup with UCLA. I'll snake around to the bracket here. Played a lot better in this game, especially shooting the ball and on defense. But still, they won 73-57. They move on to a matchup with Michigan State. Michigan State beat Louisville 77-69. Shockingly, Michigan State, I think, shot at least even, if not better, than Michigan State, Michigan State shot better than Louisville in that game. I don't know why I flipped that, but shocking, honestly. I mean, Louisville, obviously, a good three-point shooting team. That's what their team is really banked on, is shooting a lot of threes and making a lot of threes. Michigan State, not quite the same when it comes to those two categories. So a very interesting result there. Good for the Spartans, of course, and they will move on to face UConn. I'll get to a Sweet 16 preview in a second. But St. John's beat Kansas 67-65. The Johnnies had a huge lead in this one. Let it go late, but Dylan Darling with the buzzer-beating layup to win it for St. John's. And they move on to the Sweet 16 to play Duke, who was pretty much tied really close with TCU at the half and then pulled away in the second half pretty convincingly, ended up winning by 23. So sets up two Sweet 16 matchups there. And I guess I will preview the Sweet 16 in each region. I'll just go region by region. But Duke against St. John's, I think I have Duke here. I didn't like anything that St. John's did offensively, because I don't think it's sustainable against a much better defense. Yes, Kansas is a good defense, but St. John's didn't even get to 70 in that game. And the thing is, Duke is still much better than Kansas defensively, even without Patton Gongwa. And if he does somehow come back, then this game is going to be even more lopsided. But I just don't see St. John's having the reliable scoring options that Duke does. This is going to be a really, really physical game, and probably will be pretty low scoring. But I think it'll still be a Duke win, though. I think that spread is deceivingly small just because people are anticipating a lower pace game and lower scoring. If anything, it has less to do with the actual separation of the teams, especially if you're comparing spreads in that game to like the Michigan spread or the Arizona spread in their game. But on the other end of things, Michigan State and UConn is a really interesting matchup, because I don't really believe in either of these two teams as Final Four teams. And I think, you know, this is kind of the region where I picked Duke by default, because I really didn't like any of these teams being a Sweet 16 or a Final Four team. They kind of all play some ugly basketball. And when UConn runs their sets but doesn't shoot, which has been a lot this year, even they look pretty ugly, even though normally they look great on the eye test. And they're one of the most, I guess you could call it, visually appealing teams to watch in the country. But this year has been not that quite good, because they just haven't shot the ball well out of those sets. And I think Michigan State, I think, is actually built pretty well to deal with that. There's a reason why this game is basically a pick 'em line. I'm going with Michigan State here, just because I don't really think that UConn has done anything that's made me feel super confident about them this tournament, whereas Michigan State has just kind of stayed the course and played their normal game. And I think that UConn is definitely within the reach of teams that they can beat. I don't think that a lot of the national title contenders are for Michigan State, but I do think UConn is a team that they can handle, and I think they're going to win this game, despite being the underdog here. And then I still have Duke going to the Final Four, because really, I mean, this is pretty much what I had in my bracket in the first place, so I don't see a reason to deviate from it now. Neither team has done anything too crazy to alter that prediction. However, in the South, there have been crazy things to alter the prediction. Florida had the easiest, not easiest matchup, but easiest time dealing with their 16 seed out of any of the ones. They won 114-55, but then they moved on to play Iowa, who had just beaten Clemson by 6. I'll get to that result in a second. In the 5-4 pod here of the teams that really have not had major tournament success in their team's history, Vanderbilt beat McNeese by 10, and then Nebraska beat Troy 76-47 to claim their first ever NCAA tournament win. Crazy to say that, but it's true. Moving down the bracket a little bit, we have some prediction games. VCU winning, Texas A&M winning, as I said earlier. Illinois just breezed through Penn 105-70. Houston, same thing to Idaho, 78-47. And staying at the bottom of this bracket, well, those two teams just completely outclassing their opponent in the second round. Houston beating A&M 88-57, and then Illinois beating VCU 76-55, which sets up Illinois and Houston in the South in Houston. Look, it was going to be hard for anybody to beat this Houston team in Houston. It gets harder now that obviously Florida's not in it anymore, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I have to stick with Houston there, and I'm sticking with Houston to go all the way through this region. But before I get there, Rest of the region's action. Nebraska beat Vanderbilt 74-72. Tyler Tanner's half-court shot just barely rimming out at the end of that game. Really, nobody other than him was doing much of anything in the first half, and maybe if they had gotten some other contributions, they could have won this game. But instead, Nebraska wins it in a crazy environment. But the Cornhuskers get not only their first, but their second NCAA tournament win in the same season. So, of course, first, second weekend appearance for Nebraska. And wouldn't you know it, that set up a rivalry matchup with Iowa because the Hawkeyes took down number one seeded Florida. The only one seed to miss out on the second weekend is Florida, which, frankly, if you followed along all year and didn't just tune in for the last 10 games of the season, this shouldn't be surprising. In terms of the 3-1 seeds that advance, being Duke, Arizona, and Michigan, getting into the Sweet 16, that it's been that top three all year long. The fourth team has been a revolving door for a while. Florida was definitely that at the end of the season, and they were pretty convincingly. But even other teams in this region, Houston and Illinois, were definitely a part of this at some point. Nebraska even was a one seed really early in bracketology when they were 20-0. There have been points at many times during the season where that fourth spot has been completely up for grabs. Whether you talk about Houston, Iowa State, UConn held it for a very long time. Purdue, obviously, at the beginning of the season, was the AP preseason number one, and they had their claim to that spot as well. So a lot of teams that you could argue were in that conversation at some point. But in reality, Florida was the team that really wasn't there all season long, and they didn't have a great game shooting wise, and that's really what everybody thought could be their downfall all year long in a lower possession game, just not getting enough opportunities to impose their physicality, and that's what Iowa did. They slowed down the game. It was a bad matchup for Florida, and Alvaro Fulgaris hit his shot to send the Hawkeyes to the second weekend. So Iowa and Nebraska, the matchup that, is typically a Black Friday football matchup, is now an NCAA tournament Sweet 16 game. I'm picking the Cornhuskers here. I think Iowa, they did beat Nebraska during the regular season, but Nebraska also did beat them again when they played their rematch in Omaha. So I don't know. Or in Lincoln, sorry. I mean, there are reasons to go with either team. But I'm going with the boys from Lincoln. I'm going with Nebraska. And then I think they'll face off with Houston, who I still think will win this region. I don't have any reason to. I mean, they won both games last weekend by 30, and I already had them winning. I don't think there's any reason for me to doubt this team. So far, Duke and Houston in my Final Four, which shouldn't be shocking considering that was my original Final Four matchup down here in those two regions. So who knows? Maybe I might even stay with it in the other regions, but we'll talk about that right now. You have Arizona, who beat Long Island pretty easily. Utah State and Villanova was a great first round game with the Aggies coming out on top there. Number 12 seeded High Point produced the annual 12 over 5 upset, 83-82 over Wisconsin, probably one of the best games of the tournament. Then you had Arkansas, who just breezed through Hawaii 97-78. Texas, who beat number 6 BYU 79-71 after advancing out of the first four. So Texas on a great run, first four all the way to Sweet 16, and we'll talk about that in a second. Then you had Gonzaga, played Kennesaw State honestly pretty close, which was a little bit surprising, and came back to bite them later. We'll talk about that in a second. But Miami got their tournament win with Jay Lucas's first year. Good for him. 14-point win for him in his first tournament. In the Hurricanes' first tournament in a little bit. Then Purdue beat Queens 104-71. Purdue ended that Miami run early. 79-69 was the score of that win for the Boilermakers, which set up a matchup with Texas, who went from the first four to the Sweet 16 by beating Gonzaga 74-68. A very good win for the Longhorns. Of course, any win they got in the tournament is a very good win because they were not supposed to be here. And I mean, look, this was the team that was not the consensus last team in, but one of the last two teams in pretty much for every bracketologist. And yet here we are, they are still dancing in the second weekend. So can't take that away from them. It's been a great season, or a great tournament for Texas. It actually hasn't been a great season. I'd be lying if I said that. But look, they're still here. They're still dancing. Sweet 16, the only double-digit seed in the Sweet 16. Good on the Longhorns for that. Texas Purdue will be an interesting matchup. We'll see what Texas team shows up because if it's the Texas team from the end of the season, they're going to lose by a lot. And if it's the team that showed up in the tournament, They have a chance to win this game. So it just, depends on who shows up. I think Purdue's got this one, though. Then, top half of this bracket, Arkansas and High Point played a predictably very high scoring, no defense involved game, and Arkansas came out on top 94-88. I mean, if you're going to get in a battle scoring with this team, there's only a few teams who could do it. Purdue is one of those teams that could just do this. I do think that a lot of teams can defend them, though, and I think talk about that in a second. But they can beat anybody in a shootout. That's for sure. And they got two teams that tried that against them, and it didn't work. Hawaii, and then obviously High Point. The winner of High Point, Wisconsin, no matter who it would be, was going to do that. But of course, the matchup they got ended up being High Point, and they ended up winning that one, 94-88. Very entertaining pod, though, for sure. And then you had Arizona, who beat Utah State despite a late surge by the Aggies, 78-66. Sets up a matchup with Arizona and Arkansas. Look, Arizona's been consistent all season long. I don't have a reason to pick against them until they play a top eight team, because that's frankly, those are the only teams who have been able to beat them all year long as teams playing like top 10 teams. I mean, yes, they lost to Texas Tech at home, but that was with JT Toppin. Yes, they lost to Kansas, but that was when Kansas was still playing really, really well, and then before they kind of faded at the end of the season, and not to mention the fact that that was in Allen Fieldhouse. This wasn't a neutral site game. So I trust Arizona still to come out of this region and end up making the Final Four. I do think it'll be chalky. I think it will be Arizona and Purdue, but I think that the Wildcats will win. Of course, notable because that's what I had in my Final Four in the first place, and surprise, surprise, in the Midwest, I'm going to spoil it. I have the same thing. I still have Michigan going to the Final Four. But we'll get to that in a second. Starting with Michigan, though, in that region, Michigan beat Howard 101-80. St. Louis beat Georgia 102-77. Put a shock through everybody thinking, wait a minute, the 9 seed beat an 8 seed by the same margin, or essentially the same margin, that the 1 seed beat the 16 by. That could be a very entertaining game. And we'll get to that in a second. But spoiler, it was an entertaining half. Don't know about the whole game. Then, number 5 seed Texas Tech beat Akron 91-71. Alabama beat Hofstra 90-70. Interesting because both of those teams, same exact margin, 1 point off of each other. Even though both teams were thought of as a maybe vulnerable team given injuries, in a 12-5 matchup and a 13-4 matchup, and just given like who's on these teams and how good Hofstra was supposed to be, people kind of liked them as maybe the only 13 seed that could win. Maybe some people also thought Troy too. And then Akron, they're comfortable with the high paced game. And people thought that could be an interesting team, a hard team to prepare for. But ironically, the one region that was supposed to have the 12s and the 13s, maybe both winning or at least one of them, went all chalk. It was 4-5. Then we'll talk about that in a second. But then you had Miami of Ohio winning the first four. Game against NC State to advance to the NCAA, not against NC State, against SMU. Texas beat NC State. But that meant they played Tennessee, and the Volunteers shut them down, shooting from the perimeter. 78-56 was the final score there, a win for the Vols. Virginia didn't really look great at all. They barely beat Wright State 82-73. And then, of course, Tennessee moved on to beat them, and I'll talk about that more in a second. Kentucky played Santa Clara in what also would be in the conversation for game of the tournament so far. The Wildcats end up on top barely because Ortega Owe hit the half-court shot, and then Kentucky went on to win the overtime period, 89-84, the final score there. Santa Clara, disappointing end to a great season. And then Iowa State beat Tennessee State 108-74, but lost Josh Jefferson. Now I'm thinking of football for whatever reason. But Josh Jefferson in that first round game, that was a pretty tough loss, and yet didn't affect them in that second round. They beat Kentucky 82-63, forced 20 turnovers in that game. So smooth sailing for them. As I said earlier, Tennessee beat Virginia, which sets up a Tennessee-Iowa State matchup. I think Iowa State has that one, but it's going to be a close game. Definitely lower scoring, probably. Maybe a 75-70 type game. But I think Iowa State takes that home. And then Alabama beat Texas Tech 90-65 to advance to play Michigan, who beat St. Louis 95-72. It was a close game in the first half, like I said, within a few possessions. But Michigan's offense just kept churning out points. And St. Louis eventually couldn't get as much going on the offensive end. Kind of late in that second half, Michigan started to pull away and then never really looked back from there. And that sets up Michigan and Alabama in Chicago. Michigan, of course, returning to where they played the Big Ten tournament. I think they're comfortable at the site. I think they have a decent fan advantage there, and I think Michigan rolls on through Alabama and through Iowa State for the Final Four. And the reason why I say that, these were my Final Four teams from the beginning, so I don't have any reason to deviate. I think I'm pretty sure that six of my Elite Eight teams are still alive too in my original bracket. I think the only one, or the only teams where that's not true is Florida losing early, and then Gonzaga I had over Purdue mostly as a contrarian pick, because a lot of the momentum that Purdue has. But I felt that was a 50-50. Definitely didn't think Florida was a 50-50. I thought they'd at least make the Elite Eight, and then bow out there. Didn't have them as a first weekend exit. But I don't see any reason to really deviate from what I already thought would happen. And considering I had Houston in the Final Four, even in that Florida region, no reason to change anything now. So satisfied with my picks, satisfied with the way that the tournament has gone. It's been a really entertaining tournament, despite it being kind of chalky. But we can move on from college basketball and now look at the NBA, starting in the Eastern Conference, where it's the Pistons who are still on top. They have won four games in a row. They are 52-19, and they're the only team in the Eastern Conference that has clinched a playoff spot so far, although more teams will join those ranks soon. The Boston Celtics are 47-24. That puts them 5 games behind the Pistons, but only a half game ahead of the Knicks, who have just won their sixth game in a row to move to 47-25. They are the 3 seed, 2.5 games ahead of the Cavs, who are 7-3 in their last 10 with 3 straight wins at 44-27. They are currently in position to host a playoff series with Toronto, who is kind of cooled off but still playing good enough to be in the playoff picture at 40-31. You have the Red Hot Hawks, who are 40-32, so with only 10 games left in the season for them. They've gone 9-1 in their last 10, and they're above the play-in cut line, which is really, really important. You have the Sixers, just a game behind the Hawks, though, at 39-33. The Magic are just a half game behind the Sixers, despite losing 5 games in a row. They're 38-33. The Heat have also lost 5 games in a row, and yet they're only a half game behind the Magic, which means they're a game behind the Sixers for that 7 seed, and 2 games behind the Hawks for the 6 seed. So if they could catch fire, either of these teams really, the Magic or the Heat, if they could catch fire at the end of the season, all of a sudden things could be close again. So very interesting teams to talk about. And then finally, you have the Hornets, who are now way above 500 at 37-34. They have won 3 in a row. They are 7-3 in their last 10. They are just 2.5 games behind the Hawks themselves, a half game behind the Heat, 1 game behind the Magic, 1.5 behind the Sixers. And really, not really worth talking about the rest of the East, but technically, mathematically, the Bucks and the Bulls aren't eliminated yet at 29-42. They will be eliminated soon. However, the bottom of the East, you have the Nets, who are 17-55. They've lost 8 in a row. They're gone. The Wizards are 16-55. They've lost 16 games in a row. They are way gone. And the Pacers are 16-56. So they are also way gone, despite not having an eight or a 16-game losing streak. They're just 1-9 in their last 10, very modest. Then in the Western Conference, you have two teams that have clinched playoff appearances. The Thunder are the first one. They're 57-15, battling with the San Antonio Spurs at the top of the standings for the best record in the West. The Spurs 54-18, despite winning 6 games in a row and going 9-1 in their last 10. They've actually lost ground during that time because the Thunder have won 12 in a row. So the Thunder strengthening their grasp on that seed. And then you have a team that's really been surging. The Lakers had won 9 in a row before losing the Pistons last night. That means they're 46-26 on the season. They are the 3 seed currently. Right behind them, though, not too far behind them at all, are the Nuggets and the Timberwolves at 44-28. Both of them currently would be playing each other in a 4-5 game where tiebreaker 4-5 series where tiebreakers would decide who the host is currently goes to Denver. And then just a half game behind them, you have the Rockets, who are 13.5 games back overall, but that just means half of a game behind the Nuggets and the Timberwolves and 2.5 behind the Lakers at 43-28. So just 1 game back in the win column from Denver and Minnesota. And really there's a separation there, though. That's when you get to the play-in teams. You have the Suns at 40-32. They're 3.5 back of the Rockets. So it's looking likely that we know really the play-in teams in the West and the playoff teams. And then in the East, we know the 10. We just don't know what order. Other than the top four, I think is kind of pretty much secure. But it's an interesting playoff picture with only 10 games to go. But continuing with the West, the Suns, 40 and 32, are 4 games ahead of the Clippers, who are at an even 500 for that 8 seed. The Blazers are just a half game behind the Clippers at 36 and 37. They're 6-4 in their last 10. And then you have the Warriors, who have been dealing with the absence of Steph Curry for a while. They are nowhere close to being eliminated from the playoffs, but they are definitely going to enter the playoffs with the worst record in the West, in theory, in the play-in bracket. They're 2-8 in their last 10. They're now 34 and 38 on the season. Of course, compared to Portland, who is 36 and 37, the only other team in all of the NBA that will be in the play-in bracket that currently has a losing record. Obviously, that can shift at the end of the season, but for now, it's just those two. Then, outside of the playoff picture, you have the Pelicans. 25 and 47, they've somehow climbed out of the basement of the West. They're 6-4 in their last 10, although obviously it doesn't really matter at this point. Then you have the Grizzlies, who are 24 and 47, a half game back there. The Mavericks at 23 and 49, the Jazz at 21 and 51, and the Kings at 19 and 53. So with that out of the way, it's time for the final segment of this podcast, which is a preview of the MLB season. Yep, that's right. It's MLB time, despite, March Madness still dominating everything, rightfully so. It is time to talk about Major League Baseball. We'll do a brief preview here. I'm just going to go with division winners and then wild card teams, and then, of course, what I think is going to happen in the championship series and the World Series. So, starting in the AL East, where we will start with our standings recaps, I have the Yankees winning this division. I think it's the tightest division in baseball. I think that's a very, I don't want to call it a fence-sitting take, but I mean, it's a pretty standard take for anybody to have. That division is stacked with a lot of talent. And yes, the Yankees, I still do have winning that because look, they tied with the Blue Jays last year. And I think the Blue Jays lost some more important pieces, and now people will be gunning for them since they won the AL pennant. Meanwhile, the Yankees will be healthier than they were last season. They'll have Gerrit Cole back pretty soon. They'll have Carlos Rodon back early-ish in the year, maybe May, maybe early June, who knows? But I think Yankees overall deeper, especially in the rotation this year than they were last year, and I think that'll go a long way for them this season. And I think they do win the division because again, they already tied for it last year. I still think talent-wise, they're still better than Toronto. And then in the Central, I have the Tigers. I don't think this should be a surprise. I've been high on the Tigers really for, you could honestly say the entire lifespan of this podcast. I've always thought that they are better than their record has indicated. And I think that, even though last year it was a tough end to the season to keep that division close with Cleveland, I still do think Detroit has what it takes to win the division this year. I think the addition of Framber Valdez will add an extra punch that they really, really need to take command of this division that really has a bunch of teams that can't even get to 90 wins. I think they might actually do that this year. I don't think they're going to win the division by a ton of games, but maybe, 4 or 5 over Cleveland or Kansas City, frankly. Then in the West, I have Seattle winning it. Yes, I know Houston's dominated this division for a while, but Houston also missed the playoffs last season and or the postseason last season, and they don't have Framber Valdez anymore. I know they're in theory healthier with Yordan Alvarez coming back if he can stay healthy. Pitching wise, obviously they need to stay healthy this year, but and Hunter Brown is great at the top of that rotation, but I still do think that Seattle is the pick there. That being said, I have Houston in the wild card, and then I have two AL East reps. I have Toronto and I have Boston, and I'll get to a little bit more on those teams later. But obviously, Toronto coming off the World Series will be a formidable team in the postseason, and then Boston, a team that's retooled itself a lot over the past few years, made the playoffs last year, and should do the same this season. I think that's pretty clear, and that's definitely the expectation there. So, with those expectations set, we'll see if the Red Sox can live up to that. But moving on to the National League, of course, we'll start in the East there. I'm picking the Mets very tentatively. I think there are three teams that could win this division. I think I'm going to talk about the other two in the wild card race. But I'm picking the Mets there in the Central. I'm picking the Cubs again. I think that's a two-horse race, and I think I'm picking the other one to be in the wild card, although a lot of people probably like Cincinnati as well. That's not the team I'm thinking of. In the West, it's got to be the Dodgers. I mean, look, the Giants went 81 and 81 last season. I don't think they got, they improved by a significant enough margin to jump up like 5 to 10 wins. I just don't think that's happening. Despite that, I mean, that's literally all it would take is about 10 wins to become, go from an 81-81 team to a 90-win playoff team. However, I don't see it happening. I think the Padres obviously made the playoffs last year, but I think this might be a year where they don't actually end up in the wild card at all. And teams that I do have in the wild card are the Phillies and the Brewers, two playoff teams from last year that obviously were in the Dodgers' path, the Brewers in the NLCS, the Phillies in the DS. But I have the Braves coming back to life. I think Ronald Acuña Jr. makes that big of a difference. I think generally this team being healthier makes that big of a difference. I think having Drake Baldwin as an established figure in this lineup, and then also the top of the lineup still having Matt Olson and Ozzie Albies along with Acuña, I think that's a really, really good top four of a lineup. And if that's what they decide to roll out with as the top four, I think it'll hit pretty well. And I think that the Braves overall will be a good team this year. Although that final spot could go to a lot of teams. I mean, Pittsburgh's going to make some noise for that as well. They've upgraded their roster. Obviously, Cincinnati was the team that claimed that final spot last season. I already talked about the Giants. I talked about the Padres. That's really up for grabs between all of those five teams, and you could argue the Brewer spot is too. I think, though, to be honest, I don't have an NL West team in here. I wouldn't be shocked if one of the Giants, Padres, or Diamondbacks just significantly improves throughout the season, makes a big trade, has a player with a breakout season, something that impacts the race enough that the other teams in that division kind of falter a little bit, and then all of a sudden you have an NL West team in here as well. And I think, frankly, the second place team in the Central is probably the one that ends up getting kicked out of the playoffs if that's a thing that happens. But we'll just have to wait and see. For now, I think I feel decent about picking those teams, and I think the Braves are kind of my surprise team this year that I'm picking to overtake a lot of the teams that people think are playoff locks. Then in the ALCS, fast forwarding way too far into the future, but I'm going to try to make these predictions anyway. I won't tell you who wins to get here, but I think the Mariners overtake the Red Sox in the ALCS. I think the Red Sox pitching in a shorter series is really, really dangerous to deal with. And I think that this year, with a little bit of experience and kind of the full new look roster under its belt, or having a year under its belt, I think they actually make the jump necessary to get into the ALCS. And then I have the Dodgers beating the Cubs in the NLCS. Not sure about the Central or the East winner against the Cubs in general. I think it's a really weird matchup. And I'd rather go with the team that I feel more confident in winning the division in the first place. So I'm just picking Chicago kind of by default here. I really think you could kind of swap these teams based on seeding, who ends up at home, who ends up playing who in the wild card. There's a lot of swaps you can make here. But I think the Dodgers obviously are going to be my pick. And of course, look, I'm a Dodger fan. This team somehow got better after last season, which is a repeat season. I'm going with the Dodgers in the World Series. I'll take them over the Mariners in a 6-game series in the World Series. But we'll have to see what happens, starting with Yankees Giants tomorrow night. And for now, that wraps up this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, March 31st, where we will once again talk about my weekend predictions, have our weekly review of the NBA, and talk more about the NCAA tournament, of course, with the second weekend and then heading into the Final Four. And we'll also talk about the beginning of the MLB season a little bit. So that is all good. And in the meantime, please be sure to check out my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday. And all of that will be on our social media handles. Of course, maybe some MLB power rankings later in the season. Haven't decided yet. But all of that, when it comes out, will be on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, plus the number 24. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.